Boston by Steinway, and other fine pianos.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from Champaign Park District, presenting Ice Cream and Independence with the Indianapolis Jazz Orchestra on Saturday, July 2nd at 7:30 p.m. The Indianapolis Jazz Orchestra presents a USO-style patriotic celebration in honor of Independence Day. Ticket information at 356-9063 or online at thevirginia.org.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580, our morning talk program. My name's David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We're also pleased to welcome back to the program Dr. Robert Bocek. He's a pediatrician and clinical assistant professor at University of Illinois. He's here once a month, always a Thursday, to talk about children's health. The idea is whatever questions you might have about children, their health, their development, their well-being, the kinds of things that you would discuss with a pediatrician, those questions here are welcome on the show. We built it into our schedule a long time ago because we thought that people would always have questions about children's health, and it would be a good thing to have it as a regular topic. So if you have questions you'd like to talk with the doctor, you can do that by calling us here in Champaign-Urbana. The number is 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line that's good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. Welcome back.
Well, good morning. It's good to be back.
We already have a caller here, someone on a cell phone, so we'll get right to them. Line number one. Hello.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question about allergies in children. Specifically, my son is a year old. And he, about the same time I did, because I suffered pretty badly from allergies, started having issues, you know, the runny nose, eyes were kind of getting really red and goopy and tearing and stuff. And so the doctor put him on Zyrtec syrup, which I guess is, pediatrician, kind of pediatrics form. But, you know, my husband and I have been wondering, is that going to keep him from building up his own, you know, his antihistamines and naturally, and are we doing him a disservice by putting him on something like that so soon?
No, probably not. I think, you know, obviously he's, well, number one, allergies at that age are a little bit unusual, but they're not impossible. And I think the other thing, how long have the allergies been bothering him?
Pretty much started in May, kind of late May,
okay.
And it's kind of continued. The doctor's thinking that
so it does sound like
trees,
the
trees that kind of started things up, and then grasses are kind of coming up now. And I'm highly allergic to everything outside,
okay.
So I'm thinking that could be somewhat genetic. But the person we were going to see about the allergies, the specialist, he said he'd rather not test them until a little bit later, just because, and he would do a testing where they'd actually take the blood and
okay.
They wouldn't actually inject them with anything.
The so-called RAS testing.
Right, I think that's what it is.
Yeah. Allergy testing at that young an age doesn't seem to work very well, and I'm not sure the reasons are known. It just doesn't seem to work very well. I think also at that age, you know, the younger the age, the more you think about foods as the cause of allergy. But again, with his starting in May when, everything started blooming and then continuing through the grass season, it does sound more like a pollen allergy. And no, I don't think, there's no reason not to give him an antihistamine to help or something to help with his symptoms. If his symptoms make him uncomfortable, if he's got the itchy eyes and the chronically runny nose and the sniffles and the cough and all that sort of stuff, mm-hmm. I don't think there's any reason at all not to give him an antihistamine.
Okay. She's hoping that by the end of June, that should be done and we can take him off of it.
Yeah.
And right now his eyes are clearing up a little bit more, but he still has a cough and the runny nose is starting to dry up a little bit too.
Okay.
So,
and again, it's lasted too long to blame it on an infectious disease like a cold.
Right.
You know, and the other thing I suspect, the other thing that'll help differentiate an infection from a allergy is usually with an allergy, the nasal discharge stays clear and watery.
Right, and that's kind of what it's been, just fairly clear.
Yeah, whereas with a cold, it goes through its thick yellow-green stages and then clears up. But
right.
No, I can think of no reason at all not to make this little guy feel a little bit more comfortable with an antihistamine.
Okay, well, good. That's good to hear. Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Very good. Thank you. We have someone else, another cell phone person here. This is line number two. Hello.
Hello?
Yes.
Hi. I was wondering, what is the percentage of children coming down with melanomas or other forms of skin cancer? And the reason I ask is my 13-year-old was just seen by a dermatologist for something completely different. And he noticed a mole on his thigh, which I thought looked suspicious, and with family history of melanoma and basal carcinoma, I had the dermatologist look at it, and along with three others on his back, and she removed one on his back and one on his thigh to biopsy, and I was just wondering what percentage of children, because it's very uncommon, and but with the family history, I was slightly concerned.
Yeah, I can't, you know what, I can't give you exact numbers. It is very rare. It is possible, but it is very rare, very rare.
Okay.
There's reported cases, but yeah, it is very rare. And the exact numbers in the United States, I can't.
Because I think his only risk factor, which is a pretty bad risk factor, is the family history. He wears sunscreen all the time.
Okay.
He's got dark skin to begin with. But with the family history, it was kind of a concern.
And again, yeah, you know, yes, it is possible. It's unlikely. It's possible. But I think, yes, it is important to keep an eye on moles.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, I can't see my back, and I can't
right.
see my scalp. Well, I can see, unfortunately, I can see my scalp quite well. But anyway, most kids can't are quite hairy and can't see their scalp very well. Some dermatologists or some people say that all nevi, all moles on the scalp ought to be removed because they're covered by hair and can't be checked.
Right.
It's worthwhile to have your parent, spouse, depending on your age, you know, check the moles on your back.
Sure.
Where you can't see them. And what we're looking for is large size moles. We're looking for moles with irregular borders. We're looking for basically moles that are changing.
Yeah.
And those are more suspicious.
These are definitely irregular, and they're fairly large. She seemed to feel like they were just going to be irregular moles that could, you know, if left untreated, basically, or not removed, something nastier.
And then as a medical student, one of my tests in pathology was this funny-looking slide. It was an amelanotic melanoma. So it was a melanoma that wasn't discolored. So unfortunately, you can get moles, malignant moles, that aren't dark black.
Right.
So I think it's important to check the skin and look for changes.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Right, you're welcome.
Good. Thank you. Bye-bye. Other questions from people who are listening are certainly welcome. Our guest is pediatrician Dr. Robert Bochak, and this is our regular monthly show on children's health, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. And I suppose it'd be a good thing to nag people once again, as we always probably do when we have physicians on the show, particularly in the summertime, that the recommendation is that for everybody, that if you're going to be spending time outside, that you should wear sunscreen. And that means not just if you're going to be spending the day at the beach, but I guess the recommendation is even if you say you're going to be spending the day outside, you're going to cut the grass, you're going to work in the yard, whatever it is, if you're going to be outside for a long period of time exposed to the sun, that really what the dermatologist and everybody else will say, yes, you should be wearing sunscreen.
Yeah. And if you're in a swimming pool, reapply it frequently because it may get washed off.
All right. And also now, though again, this is something we've talked about too, for babies, the recommendation I think is that probably, particularly when they're little, what you want to do is shade them maybe more than put the sunscreen on.
Yeah. Under 6 months of age, I think sunscreens aren't approved for children. So, yeah, keep them in the shade and keep their hats on them and that sort of thing.
Okay. Let's.
Of course, then we have to worry about vitamin D.
That's true. Yeah, we were just talking before we got going here. the doctor and I were talking about all the things we have to worry about, and I guess that indeed there have been some concerns raised lately that perhaps people aren't getting enough vitamin D, and that the main way I guess we all get that is through the sun, through sunshine. But now we're telling on the one hand, there's one group of doctors that are saying, well, you really ought to limit your sun exposure and you ought to wear your sunscreen. And then here come along some others to say, well, now, wait a minute. You want, need to make sure that you're getting this vitamin that you get primarily. You can get it in your diet, but the main way, I guess, that we all are supposed to get it is through exposure to the sun. Now, I'm not sure that actually the sunscreen get in the way of you're getting the vitamin D.
I think so. But you know what? I think that was somewhat jesting because all of our milk is vitamin D fortified. I'm not too worried about it. And I think that mainly where we see vitamin D deficiency is reported in this country is where people just don't get outside. Or in some cultures, particularly for the women who are covered from head to toe. Mm-hmm. In clothing, so they really are never exposed to it. And their breast milk then is deficient in vitamin D, so their babies who are breastfed will be deficient in vitamin D. But basically, that was in jest. I don't think I'd worry too much about that. Yeah.
I wonder, though, whether there might be a potential problem maybe in adults who don't drink a lot of milk, don't have a lot of dairy products in their diet, and that indeed may be an issue. I think that you can get it from other kinds of foods, but maybe not as readily as you can from
milk.
From milk, yeah.
But still, I think rickets in a healthy person is quite an unusual problem.
Okay.
Eat well, drink milk, because it's an important food. Skim milk, please. For adults. Now get myself into trouble because we don't want young children on skim milk. They need to be on a fully fatted milk.
Okay. Very good. Let's talk with somebody else here. Champagne caller, line one. Hello.
Hi. Good morning.
Yes.
I was just wanting to make a comment for a piece of give a piece of information to the lady who called with a son who had multiple rather large pigmented nevi. And that is a syndrome called dysplastic nevus syndrome that can run in families. And that I think that would increase the risk in children if they have that. And what that is multiple pigmented nevi that aren't melanomas but that have more of a propensity to turn. And it's called dysplastic nevus syndrome. Thanks.
And dysplasia means the cells are not abnormal, but they're a little funny. They're not normal either, but for some reason these do have a propensity to go on to become funnier.
Yeah, okay. Well, I thank you for the call. And that again, I guess, just underlines the importance of making sure that you monitor them.
Yeah.
To see what's going on. Okay. Well, again, we're open for your questions. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. Our guest is Dr. Robert Bocek. He's a pediatrician, and he's on the program here once a month, always on Thursday. We talk about children's health. Something that we have talked about quite a bit and is getting a lot of attention in the news has been the increase in incidence of diabetes in the country. And one of the big concerns has been the increasing numbers of children, apparently, who have type 2, what we used to call adult onset diabetes. And I guess there would have been a day where we would have thought it would have been more likely if a child is going to have diabetes that it would be type 1, which used to be called juvenile diabetes. And generally, those are the people that, right from the start at least, have the need for insulin. And the concern has been that we're starting to see more children with type 2 and that's probably related to being overweight. Now, just recently, though, I heard something to the effect that there apparently is some concern that maybe some of these children are actually being misdiagnosed and that, in fact, they really do have type 1 diabetes, but that somehow, and it may indeed be because there's a weight issue, that some doctors are going right to say, oh, well, this is type 2, Is it really that difficult to make that diagnosis, to distinguish between, say, you have a child or maybe an adolescent or someone who is approaching adolescence, to really figure out, does this child have type 1 or type 2 diabetes?
I guess theoretically it wouldn't, because if you do insulin levels in a type 2, usually their insulin levels are maybe higher than they should be, but there's an insulin resistance. For some reason, the body doesn't perceive, the insulin isn't as effective. Mm-hmm. Whereas with a type 1, the insulin dependent, what happens is the pancreas, the islet cells in the pancreas completely disappear. So these people aren't making any insulin at all. But the type 2 diabetes that we see in obese adolescents, and these generally aren't little chubby kids, they are obese adolescents. And the other thing that I've not seen any explanation of, usually it's in Hispanics and African Americans. And I haven't seen any guess of why this is. This is sort of always has been sort of and I've sort of referred to it as a type 1B or 2B or something like that, because it's always been sort of a strange type 2 diabetes, in that more of these kids seem to need insulin, and that they can have the ketoacidosis and that we see in the type, more likely in the type 1 diabetic. So it's really seems to behave a little differently than type 1 and a little differently than type 2. It's sort of in between them. They can get in more trouble, but it is diet responsive. If they lose, they may have to be on insulin, but if they reduce their weight and kind of clean up their diet and that, they may be able to discontinue insulin. Whereas a true type 1 will never discontinue insulin. Mm-hmm. But it's not a type 1, it's not a type 2. It's a little unique.
Yeah. And is it true that we are actually seeing more of these kind of kids?
Yeah.
And again,
I think it goes along with the increasing obesity we're seeing.
Okay.
The other thing that I wanted to talk about a little bit today is sleep. And I think we've had some questions on this over the last few months, and it's been kind of interesting. The last issue of Pediatrics had a couple articles on sleep, mainly in reference to adolescents, how their sleep pattern changes, and how school changes the school hours, and that may, if we change school hours, it may better affect our adolescents. That all kids from late childhood on through adolescence need about 10 hours of sleep a night, believe it or not, which I thought was an overestimate, but that's what the studies show. But something happens in adolescence where the biorhythms, the circadian rhythm, the sleep cycle in kids changes, and they naturally stay up. If you let them, they'll stay up later at night. And you probably remember as a teenager, too, sleeping till noon.
Oh, yeah.
But reading till 2 o'clock in the morning or something like that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Good books, though.
Good books.
Yeah, Dostoevsky and Shakespeare and all that.
Tale of Two Cities.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then they like to sleep later in the morning. And this is natural, and it goes through early adulthood, and then they start waking up, whereas the younger child naturally wakes up earlier and wants to go to bed earlier. Well, what they found is that many teenagers are sleep-deprived. Instead of getting 9-10 hours of sleep a night during school nights, they're getting 7 because they stay up later. Mom or dad, usually mom's job, kicks them out of bed in the morning when kicking and screaming, and we send them off to school. And one study was a review study. One study was done in Evanston, Illinois, at Evanston High School. And what they found out is that, these kids didn't. The tests they did, they weren't as alert. They tended to be more sleepy, especially in the early morning classes. They did better in the afternoon. And there is another study reported in the AAP News about Minneapolis. Minneapolis just changed their high school hours. High school starts an hour later, so it starts at 8:30, and they found that, attendance is better. There's less kids calling in sick. There's less fights in school. There's less kids reporting to the nurse's station. There's less kids having to go to the counselor's office and that. And that maybe we ought to change our school hours a little bit to naturally fit in with what's naturally going on with adolescents. I know it's going to present a lot of problems with after-school activities and all that, but we might be serving our adolescents better by fitting in with their natural biological schedule and may help ourselves out a lot.
Yeah. Or just right there in the lobby of the school, we put a Starbucks.
Yeah.
And the proceeds go to helping support the school. I think that'd be a good idea. Let's go to Urbana for another caller here. Line number one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I have a question regarding the health of a four-year-old girl from China. She seems healthy, except her fingernails have bumps in them, not ridges like mine do at my age, but bumps.
Pits. Probably what we call it. Maybe.
Pardon?
Little holes, little pits.
Not pits, raised.
Raised up little bumps.
Well, actually, it's kind of varied. Some are up, some are down.
Okay.
Now you mention it. Somebody told me that they thought that this was somewhat more common in Asian kids, but her mother's, she's my grandchild, and we're concerned about her nutrition.
Yes. Yeah, and I can't remember offhand all the causes of pitting in the fingernails. I think iron deficiency is amongst them, but I think most likely she may have had some nutritional deficiencies in the past.
Well, she didn't come to this country till she was 15 months old.
Okay.
And all she had was the rice formula thing.
Yeah.
Till then.
And she's 4 years old now and still
has... 4 and a half, yeah.
And still has the pits.
Well, actually, they developed after she got here.
Hmm. The other thing that will sometimes do that is trauma.
Such as?
Oh, just...
Bumps?
Yeah. I'm not talking major trauma abuse. I'm just talking about, what kind of play activities does she have?
Girly ones.
Okay. Okay.
Very, very girly play activities and stuffed animals, and she's not a tomboy, and she doesn't do much that would make me think she's bumping her hands much.
But she's otherwise doing well, growing well, and is healthy?
Yeah. She's small, but not significantly small for a Chinese girl of her age.
Yeah. We can't compare her to the standard American growth chart. We need to.
Yeah. On the Asian chart, she's okay.
Okay.
A little bit at the low end, but growing steadily. She's thin, but not skinny.
Yeah. You know, I think probably these are more play-related, minor trauma-related. Are they on all her fingers?
Why would it be consistently over all of her fingernails?
It's over all of her fingernails.
Mm-hmm.
I'd have to research nail pitting.
I could probably do a Google on that. That's the word I want?
Yes.
And I might come up with something there, huh?
Yeah, pitting of fingernails. And I think there's going to be fairly long list coming out.
Now, there are not a lot of foods that she likes. But we do try, she takes a vitamin daily.
Okay.
And one of the things we thought we would try is adding, protein to her milk in the morning. She doesn't eat a lot of protein.
Well, that's, you know what, does she drink milk? Do a good job on milk?
Not a lot.
Okay.
Get milk down her in the morning and a little bit at noon.
Yeah, generally.
She doesn't eat a lot of anything.
Okay. That sounds like a 4.5-year-old.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? If it's green, it's inedible.
Absolutely. Absolutely. They tend to be, at that age tends to be fruit eaters, vegetable avoiders.
Yeah, well, she eats lots of fruit.
Especially bananas.
Well, yeah, almost any fruit. She loves fruit.
Yeah, and vegetables will come later in life.
Good.
Meat, generally, they don't seem to like to chew at that age.
Well, and I think that she probably has a little more difficulty with this than kids who were raised from beginning in this country, because she wasn't given anything to chew until
yeah.
she was 15 months old.
Yeah, and kids don't like to chew anyway. That's why they like to eat
soft
food. Yeah, I'll eat a hot dog.
And macaroni and cheese.
Macaroni and cheese. Yeah.
Yeah.
Craft only. Not the stuff you make
not
at home.
Not the good stuff.
Not sounds pretty normal that way.
Yeah. Everything seems fine to us except her nails look abnormal.
Okay. I would guess she's probably normal and healthy. And this is just for some reason a peculiarity of her nails.
That's what I was kind of thinking.
Yeah.
But I'll still look at pitting and see if we can spot
yeah.
something weird like magnesium.
Yeah. How's her hair?
It doesn't grow very fast.
Okay.
Very slow.
Okay.
Her nails grow fast.
But they pit.
Yeah. But her hair, my God, her hair is slow.
But her hair is thick.
No, it's not. No.
Okay.
It's getting thicker. Gradually, very
okay.
gradually. But she does not have a lot of hair. It covers her head. It looks fine, but it's not thick hair.
Okay. But it doesn't break off. It's not brittle.
It doesn't fall off. It's very slow growing hair.
Okay.
She just got a little sister this year, and her hair is growing way faster.
Okay. And she's not any
sister.
And she's not on any medication.
No.
Okay.
No medication. We're patching an eye, but no medication.
Okay. Because hair and nails go together.
Well, her hair does not grow as fast as her nails.
Okay.
Neither grows as fast as her sister's.
Okay.
So we have another Chinese child to compare. Her sister's nails are okay.
Just out of curiosity, how were her kneecaps?
Her kneecaps?
Mm-hmm.
They seem fine. Why?
Okay.
What would I look for?
Oh, there's a hair patella syndrome. The funny hereditary thing.
Huh. What would her kneecaps look like if it were a...
You know what? I don't remember. I'd have to look that one up, too, because...
Her legs are nice and straight.
Okay.
And her knees are small, and she runs well. Her gross motor and fine motor
okay.
skills good.
You know, my best guess is she's probably a normal child with peculiar fingernails.
Yeah. And slow-growing hair.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're probably, that's what I think, too. But I thought, well, it's kind of different. I thought I'd ask.
Yeah, because, yeah, I can't get...
She'll be going for a well-child appointment before too awfully long, and we'll let Dr. Swearingen look at her, too.
That sounds good.
But I really appreciate your thought.
You're welcome.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Let's see. We are a little bit past our midpoint here with our guest, Dr. Robert Bocek. He is a pediatrician, clinical assistant professor at the U of I. Once a month, he's here, and we talk about children's health. And if you have questions, you should give us a call. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. We were talking a little bit earlier about caffeine. Among people who study these things, it's apparently reported that the percentage of Americans that have caffeine every day has gone up. 90%, almost 90% of adults and 76% of children have some caffeine every day. For adults, the main source is coffee, and for kids, it's soft drinks. Do we have some reason to be concerned about caffeine consumption in children?
Thank you for taking me back to the sleep thing, because...
Oh, I guess that there can be a connection
these,
there.
Yeah, because these kids, are getting, especially for the high schoolers,
mm-hmm.
the younger kids, mom or dad say, it's your bedtime, go to bed. So they do okay, but the high schoolers, mom and dad don't do that. So they're sleep deprived, so they get up in the morning and say, you know what, I got to go to school, I'm a little bit tired, so I think I'm going to have a Mountain Dew. And yes, that's where it's coming from.
Just like it's like we would say, man, give me a coffee.
I got to stop at, whatever, espresso bar.
Yeah.
And so I think there is, but to the best of my knowledge, in most cases, you worry about people with cardiac arrhythmias and that sort of stuff because it is a stimulant that way. But for the most part, I don't think there's any reports that caffeine is harmful, except that some of these kids are so buzzed on caffeine that they can't fall asleep at night, which furthers their sleep problems, so they need more caffeine the next morning to get them through the day. And caffeine will cause... Yeah, I've seen kids who have recurrent headaches. You take them off their caffeine with much difficulty. You take them off their soft drinks, and the headaches tend to go away. But for the most part, caffeine can cause problems. For the most part, it doesn't.
All right. Let's see. We have another Urbana caller here, line number one. Hello.
Hello, this is Bruce. There are a couple things on your show that I kind of wanted to add comments for. I'm 17, and I just got my junior year. As for the caffeine thing, I've actually had to do a bit of research because I have tendonitis from playing instruments. And it actually can restrict blood flow, and it does have withdrawal symptoms. And one of the things I noticed when I was getting headaches from not having it is if I went to tea, I would go first just to normal tea and then also decaffeinated tea. That was like a nice substitute for what people would normally have is like coffee and stuff. And that has a lot less caffeine. And it has the same mindset that you're drinking a cup of coffee, so
yes.
It helps. Also, you mention a lot, especially for little children, drinking milk. I'm a vegetarian, and I have a lot of vegan friends. And so one of the things that I found that helps is if you don't drink milk, or if your child, if your children are under one, you're not supposed to drink cow's milk, try drinking not from concentrate orange juice, and usually if it has calcium, it also has vitamin D, and it has just about the same amount as if you're drinking a glass of milk, and so you can get your same nutrition that way.
Yes. Well, you can get your vitamin D and your calcium that way.
Yeah.
But you can't get your protein and the other stuff that way.
Well, you get protein in other places.
Yeah.
Because protein's also in bread and...
Bread's not a terribly good source, but yeah.
It's complicated because it comes from amino acids that are everywhere.
Yeah.
But
if you're a vegan, you need to eat a lot of legumes, beans, to get your protein in.
Yeah, the thing is, though, for the average person, not everybody, but for the average person, if you eat a well-balanced diet that has grains are a big thing.
Yeah.
Not just beans, but there are other things like nuts, and those are just the commonly heard ones. If you eat an averagely balanced diet, you're going to get your protein in. But a lot of things that's missing is calcium and vitamin D.
Yeah.
And that can be found in orange juice.
Yeah.
If you get the right kind.
If you get the right kind. And usually, if you got the kind that's vitamin D and calcium supplemented, it's going to be on the label in bold print.
Yeah, it usually is a blue label. I usually get four of those natural or Tropicana, because it's also not from concentrate. And also, if you need more supplements or something, there's usually a health food store. You can also look for a food co-op, because usually it's cheaper. But just to kind of address people who are vegetarians or vegans with children, because there are resources out there. It's just not easily heard of.
How did you happen to get hooked on caffeine? Just out of curiosity.
It wasn't anything. It was just like drinking a soda. I actually don't like coffee that much, but I would drink a whole lot of black tea. Earl Grey is my preference. And like I said, I'm a teenager, but not only do I go to sleep really late, but I also like to get up really early, just naturally.
Okay.
I get up really early in addition. So I...
So you're well less than 8, 9, 10 hours of sleep at night.
Usually I get, you know, 5 or something.
Okay.
Like last night, I probably went to bed at 12 or 1, and this morning I woke up at about 8 or 9, which is earlier for me. I mean, later for me than I usually do if I'm going to school.
You're not helping me very much with changing the rules for sleeping for teenagers, are you?
Well, I've always been an early riser. I just so happened to go to sleep there. But I have noticed, when I was younger, I would get up at like 5 in the morning quite easily. Now I wait till about 8 or 9.
Okay. 10. So as you got into adolescence, you did switch your sleep schedule around.
Yeah. I mean, I'm still earlier than the average teenager, but I'm later than I used to be.
Okay.
So
thank you.
It does change.
Yes.
And all my friends have noticed it, too, because I am, or I'll be hanging out with friends watching a movie like last night. And it is consistent like that.
Okay. And as far as, you know, protein is generally not a problem. Are you a strict vegan?
No, I actually have tried it. I like some foods. But I am more than the average vegetarian. I also don't eat meat, fish, or gelatin. And I don't like milk that much, but I do eat cheese and yogurt.
Okay.
I do drink the orange juice because I love orange juice.
Yeah.
So all I do is I get it with the calcium and vitamin D, and I have several glasses of that a day.
The vegetarians who will have dairy products or eggs in their diet, mm-hmm. not both, either one, mm-hmm. generally are no problem because the strict vegans are usually the ones that have to seek out more unusual beans than that because there's a couple of sulfur-containing amino acids that aren't in a strict vegan that you have to look for. You have to find some unusual foods for. But outside of that, the so-called lacto-oval, the egg dairy product vegetarians, that's go ahead, enjoy. You don't have to seek out unusual or unique foods to balance your diet. And the other place where you're absolutely right is the average American. I mean, what are the fast food restaurants advertising now? Third pound. Remember when McDonald's was a little bitty hamburger? Then it went up to the quarter pound. Now it's a third pound. I mean, the average American is way over. We have more protein in our diet than we need. Yeah. Consequently, we have more fat in our diet than we need. Consequently, we're getting overweight and obese. And consequently, teenagers are getting type 2 diabetes. And
the other two things I wanted to mention is even if you don't do the orange juice, something that has more protein, if you're looking for that, is, or if your kids just don't like milk but they can drink it, is a tofu shake, which is if you go to the store and you get soft tofu, the little box kind of tofu, you put it in a blender, you put some frozen strawberries in, and if you want to, you can add milk or orange juice.
A smoothie.
Yeah, but you have the tofu kind of hidden in there. Kids don't notice it's in there, and it doesn't have a taste because it blends in with the strawberries, and it has a lot of protein and nutrition.
Yeah.
And that's something that I know my friend's mother uses because, like, half of her children can't stand milk.
Okay.
So that's something that parents could try as well.
Or you could sneak yogurt instead of tofu.
Yeah, but if your children drink milk, that's fine. If they don't, there's something else out there. And like I said, also, you can always look for a Common Ground food co-op, or not Common Ground, that's the one we have here, but just a food co-op. There's usually one around, or at least a health food store.
Okay.
Well, thanks very much.
Very
good.
Bye-bye.
We have about 10 minutes in this part of Focus 580. It's our regular monthly show on children's health. We've been doing it for a long time with our guest pediatrician, Dr. Robert Bochak. And so if you have questions, it could be diet, could be sleep, could be behavior, could be development, could be illness, could be wellness, anything that you could think of talking about with a pediatrician, you can call in, you can talk with the doctor, and he'll do his best to help you out and respond to your questions. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Just to go back to something we mentioned earlier again, because there is and has been so much concern about particularly the amount of fat that on the average that Americans are consuming, and particularly concerned about children being overweight and adolescents being overweight. I'm sure that there are parents who were, at least some parents, who are thinking about the fat in their kids' diets, which at some point is appropriate to restrict fat because it's sort of like the same rule for adults. But when you're talking about babies, you know, when kids are really little, there it's like it's as you said before, you don't you if you're going to give milk to kids, you don't want to give them skim milk. Particularly early on as they're developing fat, you've got to have fat.
Yeah, in the first year of life, we want a fully fatted formula because they're not getting much else. They're getting some baby food, but it's probably not significant. So they're basically in the first year of life, or 9 months to a year, living on milk. So we want them on a fully fat, well, breast milk preferably for a while, and then a fully fatted milk, and then we probably don't want to worry about fat intake at all during the growing period, unless there's a family history of hypercholesterolemia and that sort of stuff. And then maybe we want to worry about it, although I think the jury's still out on that. But yeah, we certainly don't want to fat restrict infants and young children. And I think the other thing, you read so much about diet in the news all the time. Mm-hmm. And every once in a while you hear about activities. And a healthy diet's important. A healthy activity level's important. And get the TV out of your kid's room. Because there's direct correlation between the amount of TV time or the amount of screen time now they're talking about, because we need to think about video games and the internet. And get the TV out of their room, limit their screen time, kick them out of the house when the weather's nice during the day. Make sure they get out of the house.
Okay. Let's take some other calls here. We have somebody on a cell phone, line one.
Hello?
Yes, hello.
Hi. I enjoy your show. Thanks for spending your time with us. I have a quick question about, jock itch. Have you guys talked about that?
Okay.
I'm overweight, and it occurs usually it seems to flare up when I cut the grass or, when I get sweaty. And I've used twice now, the over-the-counter fungicide products, and that doesn't seem to remove the problem. Is that worthy of the doctor?
I think to find out, because it sounds like you don't have tinea cruris is the technical name. Yeah. Jock itch is athlete's foot in the groin.
Right.
And it probably shouldn't
have that in my feet. So.
Yeah, and it probably shouldn't have much to do with. I mean, it's the same kind of fungus, and it probably shouldn't have much to do with sweating. And I think you might go to the doctor and find out exactly what's going on. But it sounds like if you're a bit overweight, it's probably just skin sweaty skin rubbing against sweaty skin. And it might be that instead of using an antifungal, maybe using some kind of Zeosorb, an absorbent powder might be a better way to go.
I tried the Gold Bond powder.
Okay.
Gold Bond powder, and it just seems to make it worse. So that's why I thought it might have been fungal, and so I tried a fungicide. It doesn't seem to work.
That doesn't seem to work,
My wife suggested putting, this may sound odd, but apple cider on the skin. But boy, you touch the skin with it, and it's like pins and needles. So. Like raw skin, And
what? Did you forget your anniversary or something?
Actually, my anniversary is today.
Oh, well, you know what? I'd get her a bouquet of flowers so she doesn't. I don't know what she might suggest next to put on there.
Yeah, really.
But I'll bet you vinegar did tingle a bit.
Oh, you better believe it. I just did it this morning when I cut the grass. Anyway.
Yeah, I think a trip to the doctor or dermatologist might be worthwhile to see what's going on there, because it doesn't sound like jock itch.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Good luck. Let's go to Decatur, line number two. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Hi, this is Aparna. I have a question about my son, who is 7.5 years old, and he has been healthy and normal, not overweight, or, not, he's an Asian kid, so not very good weight, but normal weight. But since last almost 1.5 years, he hasn't put on any weight. And his diet also has reduced. And I thought at this age it should increase, not reduce. And I was a little concerned about it, so I thought I lost it.
Yeah. No, he hasn't lost weight.
He hasn't lost weight. He lost a pound or so, but he kind of regained it, but he hasn't lost weight.
Okay. And he feels fine.
He feels normal, yeah.
Okay.
He does his activities, he plays games, he goes to school, he hasn't been sick or anything.
Okay. Has he grown taller?
That also, not a whole lot. I mean, he has been, I would say he used to be like, you know, on 30 percentile or something, and now he is almost on, say, 15 percentile. So he hasn't grown as tall as he used to, you know, other friends when I look at other friends.
Okay. Because at that age, they're supposed to grow about 2 inches a year.
Yeah, I don't think he has grown that much. He used to grow in, you know, height and weight fairly reasonably consistently, but since last 1.5 years, he hasn't grown that much taller, and he hasn't put on any weight.
Okay. What is, and where are these measurements from? Are these good measurements at the doctor's office, or are these, is this on the home scale?
It's actually, you know, whenever we go to a swimming or something, there is a home scale, so I try there.
Okay, because a lot of our home scales are terribly inaccurate, so I don't know what to tell you about that.
Yeah, I don't rely on the home scale. I do use that, but I also double check when, you know, when we go to buy or something, and on the home scale, I just make him measure.
The other thing that I suppose I should add is kids don't grow. We say they grow 2 inches a year, but they don't. They may grow 2 inches in 3 months, and then for the other 9 months, they don't grow at all.
Right. And I kind of felt that, but it's almost like 1.5 year, and that's what kind of makes
okay.
me think that should I be concerned, or should I just leave it in, you know?
You know, if he hasn't grown his 2 inches in a year, I think I'd be concerned. And
okay.
I think that's worth a trip to the doctor and see what's going on.
Okay. All right. Sounds good. So I think I will just maybe take him to the pediatrician.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
Let's see if we can get one more here. This is someone listening in Champaign, line 3. Hello.
Hi. I just had a question for the adolescent that likes to stay up late and sleep in and is chronically sleep-deprived. I also have one of those adolescents who has a lot of allergies, and normally he takes the non-sedating stuff so that he's not groggy during school. But, you know, would it be okay to give him, like, a pretty good-sized dose of Benadryl kind of early? Would that make him sleep more? Or is he going to be groggy the next day?
I don't know. Try it and see.
Okay.
It may or may not change his sleep cycle. Theoretically, it should change his sleep cycle because it should put him to bed earlier.
Mm-hmm.
He'll get his 10 hours of sleep. He'll wake up earlier in the morning.
Okay.
Although the data, again, on that is oftentimes you can't mess with Mother Nature.
Yeah, and unfortunately, really, literally since birth, this kid has been a late nighter.
Okay.
You know, and he's just like that. And it's from my side of the family.
Yeah. His internal clock is just,
yeah.
It's set at California time.
Yeah, he'd be good there.
Yeah.
Do you have any other ideas or suggestions or you know, ways that, I mean, they say, you know, sleeping in on the weekends, although it seems to be like the only way to catch up, but that sure doesn't help you on Monday.
No, it doesn't. And I think, I don't have any other suggestions. And these articles didn't either. I think these articles are pointing out the problem that, yeah, our schools, and again, Minneapolis has done it, probably are not, they are not designed to best serve the adolescent as far as their normal circadian cycle. And these aren't lazy American kids.
Mm-hmm.
These studies have been done in various countries in the world, and this is adolescence. This is normal adolescence. This isn't lazy American adolescence. This just goes along with this change in the sleep pattern just goes along with being a teenager.
So it's a cross-cultural kind of...
It's a cross-cultural thing. It's in the human being.
Okay, well, if you hear anything about ways to deal with this. I listen regularly to your program.
Okay.
Keep us updated.
You know, I know there's been studies about melatonin, but again, it was pointed out in this article, gee, we don't know a whole lot about melatonin and how safe it is. And the other...
you hate to mess with something. That's a hormone, isn't it? I mean, you hate to mess with stuff.
Yeah.
Like that.
But studies are going on, but maybe it'd be better to change... Yeah, to not try and rechange the clock in every adolescent, but maybe it'd be easier to change the school schedule a little bit.
The schools are full of people that are older and get up early, and they don't want to come in later and work later.
Yeah, but who's the school supposed to...
Well, that's a whole other subject.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, you're welcome.
Thank you. Well, at that, I think we'll have to wrap it up for this time around with our thanks to our guest, Dr. Robert Bocek.
You're welcome.
Dr. Bocek's a pediatrician. He's with us once a month, always on a Thursday. We talk about children's health. Programs here on AM 580 are made possible by a grant from Christopher's Fine Jewelry Design, a gallery of imaginative jewelry and gifts in downtown Champaign, offering one-of-a-kind custom design, gemstone roundtables, and conflict-free diamonds direct from Canada. And of course, programs are made possible by people like you who listen every day to this radio station. In fact, thanks to the great response of so many during our spring pledge drive, we are closing in on our $850,000 June 30th listener support goal. But because of the continuing decline in our federal, state, and university funding, we must not only reach, we must also exceed that goal. And you can help by renewing your membership or by making an additional contribution. Or if you're not currently a friend of WILL, you can join us now. Please mail a check to Friends of WILL Radio. We're at 300 North Goodwin in Urbana, Illinois. The zip code is 61801, and we thank you very much. A bit later today on the Afternoon Magazine, they'll be doing one of their regular topics, a thing that comes up every month, and that is computers. And the guest for the show this month will be Greg Klein. He is science and technology reporter for the News Gazette newspaper. So if you have some sort of computer question, you're having a problem, you don't know how to deal with it, Greg will do his best to help you out. Also later on the show this afternoon, Celeste will be talking with Paul Reynolds from Consumer Reports about digital cameras. The show gets underway at noon here on AM 580, the Afternoon Magazine. Celeste Quinn is the host. In the next hour of this show, we'll talk with Jeff Record from the U.S. Air War College at Maxwell Air Force Base in Alabama about how it is that the military these days is trying to fill their needs for men and women. That'll be in the next hour. First, though, we'll break for news and update on the markets. Stay tuned.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM, working with the American farmer, creating products from his crops,